You have a line to Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The virus is surging in our state and hospital capacity is growing scarce. Health officials plan to open a field hospital Wednesday at the state fairgrounds to prevent hospitals from being overwhelmed. As of yesterday, 85% of ICU beds are in use and COVID hospitalizations are growing in all parts of the state except for the Northwest region. What do you want to ask the Lieutenant Governor about our state's COVID crisis and the administration's response? Is Wisconsin doing enough to contain the virus? We're at 800-642-1234. Lieutenant Governor Barnes, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hey, good morning. Thank you so much for having me. It's always a good time to be back here to have a chance to speak with you in the audience.
Well, here we are breaking a single day record of new COVID cases, more than 3,100 cases. What does the state need to do?
Well, it would be very helpful if the legislature decided to join us in this fight. I feel like we're standing alone at the dance floor and we're being stood up by them. And by we, I don't mean the administration. I mean the people of Wisconsin. We are in deep need of solutions, and we have the most inactive full-time, quote-unquote, legislature in the country. And their refusal to respond to these crises is continuing to put lives at risk. And it's not just the COVID lives. You mentioned the fact that our hospitals are on the brink of being overrun. Our healthcare system is on the brink of being overrun. Well, think about the medical professionals that are working in these institutions as well. When we have members, when we have nurses, we have doctors, when they contract the virus, they're then unable to work in these facilities. So it's not just the beds that we may run out of. It's also the professional staff that we are really putting in jeopardy in this moment. And if we continue down this path, I don't know what that's going to spell for patients who are going for routine checkups, people who are heart attack patients, people who may have a stroke, people who have cancer, whatever other issue under the sun. So it impacts more than just COVID-19 patients in the COVID-19 community. And until the legislature decides to do something or at least act responsibly, because they've participated in more lawsuits than they have in legislating.
Well, let me ask you this. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss said in a statement Wednesday he wants to meet with Governor Evers to look for solutions that don't result in families going bankrupt and thousands of people being added to the unemployment lines. Is that meeting on the books?
Well, first of all, he's attempting to set terms of that are of his own made up mind. Like that is a cop out. Like that's saying, I don't want to meet you with you. Nobody's trying to bankrupt families. Nobody's trying to put anybody further in debt. So even to start the conversation or the terms and negotiations on those topics shows bad faith before conversation even begins. That's the problem here. It is October. We started this thing in March, or COVID showed up in Wisconsin in March, and that's when we began to take the necessary precautions. So we're talking about we're talking about 7 months of inaction, and then he wants to say he's open to having a conversation now after 7 months. I just don't take that seriously, and it would be a shame for people to take him seriously or at his word, because he's had all the time to do so. And if I sound frustrated, it's just because people are dying here in the state. People are becoming unnecessarily ill, and small businesses are closing. People are losing their way of life, and we want to be able to come up with the most responsible solutions that actually help people. We don't have a legislature that wants to join us in that fight.
So emergency rule number 3, State Senator Steve Noss is convening an executive session of the Joint Committee for Review of Administrative Rules. Will the administration go through the rulemaking process?
Well, why wouldn't the legislature go through the rulemaking process when they see Wisconsin leading the nation? As I mentioned before, there are 19 states with a higher population than the state of Wisconsin. Only 2 of those states had more COVID cases and more new COVID cases last week. That's the problem right there. You know, they want to have an emergency meeting. Well, we are in a state of emergency right now. Have a meeting about the actual problem. Have a meeting about the actual crisis and figure out how Wisconsin digs ourselves out of this. And it's possible. We can do it. We can make the strides, you know, but it takes people coming together. And it is just a shame that the unwillingness to do so is so strong.
We're talking with Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes about the COVID surge facing Wisconsin and next steps, taking your questions as well at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Sarah now in Cottage Grove. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I'm calling because I am both a teacher and a parent, and I am really concerned about the schools. I live in Dane County, and I see lots of our schools reopening, at least partially, in a hybrid model. And I'm worried about my coworkers. Of course, I'm also worried about my child and the children in our communities. I was wondering if there was a plan to address schools at the state level, both so we could keep our community safe and also so we can help with education.
Lieutenant Governor?
Yep, schools are always of concern, whether it's K-12 or the university system, because we see a lot of spread in communities that are college towns across the state. But we also have to take into account the fact that students who are returning to school may be putting their own households at risk. And I know there's all the talk always about younger children not experiencing the most severe impacts of COVID-19. Well, we know that to be the short term. There's not enough data and research to determine what the long-term impacts are. However, students can come back home, and if they're living in multi-generational households, which is much more common in lower income communities and communities of color who've already bared the brunt of COVID-19's punch on the state, I think that we need to be very cautious and listen to parents as far as the administration, as that is a DPI or a local school district choice at this moment. And I think that as executive order number 3 is gathering public gathering or limiting public gatherings, to no more than 25%, I think that we should also be as responsible as individual school districts and school buildings consider reopening.
Take us a little bit further into the emergency rule number 3 and what it does.
Yep. So the directive went into effect yesterday morning, and it will remain in effect until November 6th. And it doesn't shut anything down. So I want people to understand that it's not a shutdown of businesses, but we are trying to prevent a shutdown of businesses. Because if the rate of infections continue to rise, I mean, this impacts working people, those who have to go to work every day, putting themselves at risk, regardless of what the business is. You can be an essential worker or not be defined as an essential worker, someone who is just making sure that you know, things go smoothly at whatever business. We don't want people to unnecessarily contract the virus. And it also applies to any gathering at locations that are open to the public. This includes stores, restaurants, and other businesses that do allow public entry, as well as spaces with ticketed events. And some of the exceptions are places of worship. Schools are a part of the exception.
Weddings? Weddings?
So
that's more complicated.
That's a little more complicated.
All right, let's pause there on the weddings, which gets into a little bit more of the weeds here. Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes is on the line. Do you think the state is doing enough to control the coronavirus? What more needs to be done? What questions do you have about emergency rule number 3 and what it does? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with the Lieutenant Governor right here on the Ideas Network. We'll be right back. We have Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes with us on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We've been talking about Wisconsin opening a field hospital to respond to the surge in COVID hospitalizations. The governor's third emergency order went into effect yesterday morning. Meanwhile, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss called it a grab bag approach, an unpromulgated rule. How do you feel about the rule and the surge? Lieutenant Governor Barnes stays with us for 10 more minutes. We stopped there on weddings. What can you tell us there?
So for weddings, we don't advise people. The order only applies to indoor non-religious weddings and receptions that are open to the public, but we don't advise people gathering. And as we have seen, weddings do have the potential to become super spreader events. And we need to do everything that we can do personally to stop this. And I know the question earlier is, what can the state do? And I mentioned the legislature. Well, at this point, it's up to individuals to do everything that we can do to stop the spread. And that would be the case whether the legislature acted or not. And that means wearing the mask. That means physical distancing. That means taking just every precaution possible to not just prevent this is contracting the disease yourself, the virus yourself, but also from spreading it to other people. And like I said, I hate to sound like a broken record, but we continue to break records in the state right now, and it's not for good things. This is preventable. It's not easy. It's not an easy task, and we get it. It's a heavy lift. However, it is the most important thing that we can do right now until there is a vaccine that is safe and readily available.
Let's bring in Dave in Muscadet. Hi, Dave.
Hi, I'm calling just to express my frustration. The Lieutenant Governor, opened his comments with railing away at the legislature for not doing anything. And then for whatever reason or whatever pretense, Speaker Voss says, yeah, I want to meet with the governor. And Lieutenant Governor says, oh, yeah, but that's not genuine. That's not real. The reality is people are suffering. Somebody needs to be the bigger person in the room. And whatever reason you can get together to meet is the only way this thing is going to be solved. And so I'm just calling to express that frustration. I'm interested in what the Lieutenant Governor has to say. Thank you.
Go ahead, Lieutenant Governor.
Yeah, I share your frustration. And I never closed the door to meeting with Speaker Voss. However, as the caller mentioned, people are suffering. So the disingenuous part is coming into a conversation that hasn't even happened yet, setting terms and charging the administration with doing something that we absolutely aren't trying to do is a pre-negotiation in bad faith. However, the door is open, obviously. The door has been open for 7 months. I hope that the caller is as frustrated at the door being open for 7 months to come up with a solution. And as far as railing away at the legislature, that is just a fact that people need to realize, because folks ask all the time. They say, well, what is state government doing? What is the administration doing? We are trying everything that we possibly can. And for the businesses that are struggling, we've announced funding for them to help make them whole again. We've announced a number of measures to protect our small businesses in this state.
And can you go a little bit into what support is it now available for small businesses?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I just want to finish because we do need help in this fight, and it's important for people to know. And that's not railing away. It's informing the public about what's actually going on. You elect your legislators. Their salaries are being paid, even though there have been 7 months of inaction. And I just want people to realize that fact, who's showing up, who's been having the conversations for 7 months. But small businesses are struggling as the backbones of communities. When small businesses suffer, entire communities suffer. They've been hit particularly hard. And we implemented new safety protections, but we're also investing over $100 million in additional funding to support our hardest hit small businesses. That's over $50 million, and we're all in grants for restaurants, for taverns, for hair and nail salons, barbershops, and other struggling industries. $20 million for the lodging industry, $15 million for the live music and performance venue industry, $10 million to support privately owned movie theaters, $10 million in additional support for nonprofit cultural arts venues, bringing the full investment there to $15 million, and $4 million in additional investments for destination marketing organizations and tourism drivers, bringing in that total to $12 million. So we've been at it. And the fact is, if I still say that it is bad faith on Speaker Voss's end, because these are conversations that have been going on that he could have been able to participate in at any moment, anytime he wanted to. And this is more of a call for them to join us than anything, than railing away, because we need them. We need them to work with us to provide responsible, sustainable solutions for the people of Wisconsin.
Lieutenant Governor, where is the $100 million coming from?
Well, it's coming from CARES Act funding. That's where the majority of the money is coming from.
And what legislation specifically do you want passed when you meet with the legislature, when that day comes?
Well, the thing is, I think that it will be, if they have concerns, right? That's the thing here. A lot of it is the concerns that they have. We actually want to hear their concerns. And it's one thing to just show up and write issue press releases or go to the press or take the social media and air those grievances when there's an opportunity for us to be constructive with them. And that's what we would like to have. We would like to have input from people all across the state. Obviously, the legislators who represent people from all across the state to talk about what people in their communities are dealing with. And, you know, I have been saying 7 months, and, you know, they did meet and pass something back in April, which is fine, you know, back in April 15. So 6 months still, regardless, without 176 days without passing a bill. I think that you look across the country and other state legislatures have convened to address issues of the devastation, the economic devastation from COVID-19, also to sort of figure out a direction for the state to take where we can have minimal impact, meaning that our businesses can function, meaning that our schools can function, but at the same time, we can be able to stop the spread.
We're talking with Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes about the COVID surge in Wisconsin. Let's bring in Diana in Blair. Hi, Diana.
Hi. I just would like to say that just wearing a mask is a social courtesy, because if I wear a mask, I protect you. If you wear a mask, you protect me, and that's courtesy. And when people protest with guns about wearing masks, it seems silly to me. Thank you.
Diana saying doesn't want to make mask wearing political or dangerous.
That's the thing. It's not. And she is spot on, because you are limiting your spread of the virus of contagions. And, you know, it is about our love that we should have for our respect that we should have for the people around us. And I think it's a simple thing. And, you know, I was a little leery at first, you know, about the idea of wearing a mask, but, you know, it doesn't matter. It's about other people's safety, right? And we should want to protect one another. We should want to live in a place where we know that our neighbors care about our well-being. That's kind of what it comes down to.
Well, before we run out of time, I want to ask you about Wauwatosa, the protests there, and what you're seeing. We've had reports of tear gas. We've had other reports of controlling protesters. What can you tell us about the decision and the protests in Wauwatosa?
Yeah, as far as the protests in Wauwatosa, it has been a very tough and challenging time for the city of Wauwatosa. And I've had a chance to speak with a couple people who are on the ground there. And there's a lot of pain. There's a lot of frustration on both ends. And I've seen I haven't seen a whole lot. I saw a couple of the news accounts of the events last night or the night before. And this is a moment where, you know, people need to come together more than ever in Wauwatosa, same as in any other situation. And we do urge, you know, people, like I said, to care for one another and to care about other people's safety, your neighbor's safety. That means, you know, keeping things, you know, as as peaceful as possible. You know, the Cole family has been through a lot. The entire city has been through a lot. And I think that people are frustrated about what comes across as a pattern of violence. And it is a breaking point with everything else going on across the country, with so many, with what feels like so many officers being able to get away with killing with impunity, understanding that every situation is different, circumstances in each case are different. But more than anything, Wauwatosa, this entire state needs to heal, and this needs to be done in a constructive way.
Lieutenant Governor, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Mandela Barnes is Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin. Coming up, is America trapped in a pandemic spiral? Science journalist Ed Yong thinks so. We look at how our country's pandemic response went wrong and what can be done to fix it. That's after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. Here with us for the morning show, I'm Kate Archer-Kent. COVID outbreaks that swept the East Coast are now surging in the heartland. The number of hospitalized COVID patients here in Wisconsin has grown to 907, with 228 people in intensive care. That's the Wisconsin Hospital Association keeping track. What questions do you have about our nation's response to COVID? Are you frustrated with how our situation in Wisconsin and nationwide compares globally? Join in 800-642-1234. Ed Yong is a staff writer for The Atlantic, where he covers science, and his recent piece is called America is Trapped in a Pandemic Spiral. Ed, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, explain what you mean by a pandemic spiral.
So I use this analogy of army ants, which forage by laying down these trails of pheromones that they also follow. If those trails loop back on themselves, the ants do this thing called a death spiral, where they walk in circles endlessly, never leaving it until they die. And it's a really dramatic example of this phenomenon where you're just walled in by your own instincts, and nothing else is keeping them in that loop. We're seeing the same thing with America and its response to this pandemic. There are so many unhelpful intuitions, errors of intuition that people make throughout the year, and that have kept us in this loop. I'm talking about things like, bouncing from one solution to the other, unhelpfully wishing for things to return to normal, magical thinking around cures and miracles. All of these things have stopped us from doing the things that are necessary to actually control this virus, and have led to patterns like what you've already described, that Wisconsin is following suit from following the path of other states and seeing massive rises in infections months after we've already seen similar patterns elsewhere and know how to keep this virus under control.
Why are we so focused, Ed, on doing just one thing at a time, or focusing on one development at a time?
Yeah, I think that's a crucial problem. To control this pandemic, we need to do a lot of different things well. We need to test thoroughly. We need to do contact tracing. We need people to wear masks. We need to get good ventilation indoors. But instead of doing all of these things together, putting in a web of measures, people just bounce from one thing to the next. It's like we only have attention for one thing at a time. And I think
journalists are guilty of this too.
Yes, absolutely. We just look for novelty all the time. Our leaders exemplify this problem. Look at the events of the last couple of weeks in the White House. They relied on testing to save them at the expense of doing almost anything else. And now we have some of the most privileged people, the most powerful people in the country, at the center of this massive infection cluster.
When you look at this infection cluster and our view on the virus, where do you see the disconnects, the false dichotomies that are kind of black and white to you?
Yeah, I think that throughout the pandemic, we've made this grave mistake of seeing things in black and white and creating false dichotomies where there aren't any. So, you know, things like masks, for example, or really any other control measure, the idea is always, do they work or do they not work? And there's always shades of gray. And I think a lot of this comes into play when thinking about lockdowns or reopenings. This idea that we have two options available to us. Either we shut everything down or we have everything open. And that's obviously not the case. You can think of this like control dial of measures where some things are open, some things are not. Higher risk venues are shutting down. Lower risk venues are opening. And putting creating this false dichotomy between everything open, everything shut, creates this like unhelpfully stark contrast and makes people think that if we don't want an entire society to close down for months at a time, then the only other option available to us is to do absolutely nothing, which is, of course, completely untrue.
It's what I hear from you is that we're functioning in this world or in the society of absolutes, all or nothing.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, some of the other intuitive errors that I've written about happen when the all bit is, in fact, nothing. When people rely on overly theatrical solutions. I mean, just look at the debate between Vice President Pence and Kamala Harris, where instead of doing the event virtually or putting in any meaningful measures to protect the candidates, they had, you know, pathetic plexiglass barriers between them that are going to do absolutely no good. So often the single measures that we put into place aren't even effective at all. They're just theatrics.
We're talking with The Atlantic's Ed Yong, who's been reporting on America's response to the coronavirus pandemic, why it has been insufficient. What do you think a successful nationwide strategy to combat the virus should look like? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Lisa, who is joining us from Janesville this morning. Hi, Lisa.
Good morning. Back in February, my husband was in Europe on a business trip. He was through four countries, four airports. They were already doing some boarding and deplaning procedures. They were taking temperatures. They were keeping track of where people were going, where they were coming from, which I know they do in general more. But he landed at O'Hare on February 29th. And he came home and he said, I landed to absolutely nothing being done. And he said, we are in deep trouble. And he was very concerned and expressed significant concerns to family and friends that there was no strategy at all to address what was coming our way and what obviously was already here.
Lisa, thanks. Lisa's showing the contrast that her spouse had. Ed?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely a fitting observation. Some of this comes down to inexperience. America has never truly been tested by a disease like this before. And a lot of countries had been and reacted much more swiftly. A lot of countries in East Asia and in sub-Saharan Africa that have dealt with major new emerging epidemics. Now, this should be, I think, a cause for humility for the so-called greatest nation in the world to react in such a lackadaisical way, where countries with far, far fewer resources and had always been seen as like the beneficiaries of the West's advice and aid did so much more. The kinds of controls that Lisa was talking about, just signs that they were taking it seriously, whereas America seems to have been trapped in this reactive rut not just in February, but just continuing now in month 10 of the pandemic.
We're getting signs and symbols here that we have a shortage of contact tracers here in Wisconsin and maybe elsewhere in the country. What do you see there?
I think that it's a reflection of two things. Firstly, that healthcare in America is so focused on treating people who are already sick rather than preventing that sickness in the first place. So it's all about very, very big, well-resourced, but very expensive hospitals. Rather than having healthcare threaded through the community, we have so underfunded public health departments that are meant to protect people's health in the first place. And that underfunding that has played out over many administrations and decades and has been made worse recently is, you know, is hitting us really hard now. It manifests in things like a lack of contact tracers at a time when we need them most. But in general, you know, we still lack a lot of stuff. I mentioned we're 10 months into this pandemic. A lot of places still lack protective equipment for hospital workers. It was still not testing enough. As you said in Wisconsin, we're in a dangerous situation where hospitals are threatening to be overwhelmed. These are the same patterns that we saw in February and March, and they've repeated themselves throughout the year.
I'm wondering, do you see places trying to share best practices, put best practices in place, or do you see a lot of each community, each city doing their own thing?
A bit of both. Okay. Honestly, the best practices that you've talked about aren't, you know, it's not rocket science, right? There's nothing like there's nothing weird or new radical that we need to be doing. The radical thing is just to be actually listening to public health experts and to be doing a lot of these measures at once. So I've talked about things like testing, tracing, having options and facilities for people to isolate, socially supporting poor or disadvantaged families so that they can actually protect themselves and their loved ones without risking infection. None of these are radical ideas, but the problem is that we're just not enacting them for some reason and not enacting them at the same time. If you look at countries that have done a good job, they're not, you know, using some you know, ridiculous playbook that we don't have access to. It's just that there isn't the political will to coordinate these efforts across the country and to do the things that we actually need to be doing. This is a failure of politics and leadership more than it is of, you know, science and technology.
Ed Yong is covering the pandemic at The Atlantic and digging into the shortcomings, the weaknesses of our nation's pandemic response, what he's seen in the past 10 months, reporting on. What would a successful nationwide strategy look like to remedy this? How has the pandemic affected your life? What do you think our state and nation need to do to get ahead of this? Still time to talk. Your insights, your reaction, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute with Ed Yong here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Ed Yong. He's a science writer at The Atlantic, and he's been writing about this pandemic spiral. Think of us as ants marching in circles. We can only sense what is directly in front of us. And this metaphor plays out as we react and respond to each blow of the virus instead of getting out ahead of it through public health planning and prevention tactics. Ed Yong stays with us for 10 more minutes. Let's take a call now. Mary Kay is with us from Kenosha. Hi, Mary Kay.
Good morning. I agree with this gentleman, and we should be following, as individuals in our homes and our businesses, should be following all the CDC guidelines, okay? That's the plan. The second thing is to innovate our homes and buildings, let fresh air in, hold more outdoor venues for businesses, okay? Clean and sanitize your hands, mask, start manufacturing the PPE in our cities, and stock our stores with Lysol products that you can mix yourself, non-aerosol. You can mix it with water, okay? Because I guess aerosol is part of the problem.
Mary Kay mentions a number of things there. Ed, what stands out to you?
Yeah, you know, this a lot of this just makes sense, right? I think ventilation is important. Getting proper protective equipment is important. Look, I think that the crucial thing here is that this shouldn't be on the the burden for doing this shouldn't fall on individuals, right? It shouldn't be down to citizens to sort of bootstrap their way out of the crisis. The reason why we still are in this problem is that there's only one actor with the wealth and the actual political power to coordinate a response across all 50 states, and that's the federal government. And as we have seen, they have absolutely abdicated on their responsibility. And Trump can't even keep himself safe, let alone the rest of the country, despite the resources at his disposal. America runs on the system of federalism, right? It's not the federal government telling everyone what to do. The states do have their own power. But in a pandemic, they cannot act as 50 independent actors. You need some sort of coordinated strategy.
What do you see of a coordinated strategy out of the CDC and the role of the CDC?
Yes, that's a really good point. So I was going to mention that aspect of the caller's point, that the CDC has been completely hamstrung by this administration. The CDC is the shining jewel of public health around the world, and it has utterly lost that sheen over the last year. It's really appalling what has happened to the CDC in being silenced, in being interfered with politically. Some of its advice is still sound. It has a lot of incredibly dedicated career civil servants working to safeguard the health of their nation. But the CDC is not out there, and it's not leading the charge in the same way that it would be that it has done in almost any other epidemic in the past. And the idea that we are now facing this pandemic of generation-defining proportions, and the CDC has been muzzled, has been shuttered, has been prevented from doing its job, is just one of the most absurd aspects of this crisis.
We're talking with Ed Young, who is a science reporter for The Atlantic. Let's take another call now. Mark is joining us from La Crosse. Hi, Mark.
Hi, I'm going to get my speakerphone off. Yeah, we got to think prevention in a larger sense. The research that U.S. participation in the viral research in China with virus fragments, they were working on 721 viruses, and shortly before COVID-19, they found one in pigs. And the Chinese got right on it, and they slaughtered 30,000 pigs, and they stopped right there. But it's tied to climate change, and there's the big picture. They put their pig farm next to the forest, and there were fruit trees on the farm, and the bats came with a virus, and their droppings is what the pigs picked up, and it could have been. So this is just a dry run for more of these things. We gotta be involved in international efforts, and we got to expose Trump's utter ignorance.
All right, and let's get Ed to connect the dots here on climate change.
Yeah, there are definitely important points being made here that we are in for more of this. Because of climate change, because of our encroachment into wild spaces. This, of course, is not only something that happens in China or in other parts of the world. It can happen closer to home, too. The last pandemic of swine flu in 2009 happened in North American farms. This is something that the entire world needs to think about, because these crises are not separate from each other. You know, our destruction of the natural world, our intense alteration of its climate are just going to keep on interacting with each other and with this risk of disease. I mean, look at the events of the summer with massive fires blazing across the country, stopping people from going outdoors, forcing them to wear a different kind of mask than the mask that is keeping them from getting this coronavirus. These disasters are going to layer on top of each other and they're going to interact. And the things that I talked about, these errors of intuition, are not just relevant to the pandemic, but they're relevant to all these other planetary problems. In many ways, this pandemic is kind of a starter planetary problem. And the fact that we have failed so thoroughly to control it should be a massive wake-up call that America and the rest of the world needs to get our act together to deal with crises of this scope.
Mark, thanks. Let's bring in Daryl now from Germantown with thoughts on the crisis. Daryl, go ahead.
Yes, I'd like to talk about your host is really hitting it right on the head with the ineptness and irresponsibility of President Trump to tie the hands of the CDC and actually insult them with their knowledge of what's going on. He makes fun of them. He's on television without a mask on and acting like an absolute fool.
Okay, Daryl, I want to ask you, Ed, as we get closer to the next presidential debate next week, a virtual affair, President Trump wouldn't want it to be part of it like that. What are the risks if it would be in person?
So, you know, Trump is not out of the woods yet. He was likely already infectious during the first debate. Thankfully, Biden doesn't seem to have tested positive yet. He won't be completely out of the woods until this weekend. But if he continues testing negative, that's a good sign. But obviously, you know, Trump is still dealing with this disease. A lot of COVID patients feel better and then do a lot worse. So even for his sake, he should be, you know, taking every possible precaution, and he should be using this opportunity to talk to the public about the safety measures that they need to take. Instead, he is talking about this disease as a blessing. He is, you know, puffing up his chest and putting up this show of fake strength in lieu of any actual strength. And, he's just trying to do what he's always done, which is just to assert his will upon reality. And that's just not going to work for a disease.
Ed, very quickly here, where do you find hope?
As I said, the methods we need to control this virus are not radical, right? We know the plan. We know what to do. We just need to be able to do that. And we've seen that this administration does not have the capacity to learn from its mistakes or to do the right thing. We do have the option to change that in a month.
Ed, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Ed Yong is a staff writer for The Atlantic, where he covers science. His recent piece is called America is Trapped in a Pandemic Spiral. We have a link to his latest reporting at WPR.org/mornings. Just ahead in this presidential election year, we unpack the Electoral College, how it works, why we use it. What do you think of the Electoral College? Abolish it or keep it? 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer Kent. It is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.